So thankful not to be in Florida. This is Schmitty, and you're listening to Talkin' Schmidt. Today on the show is Bay Area native Andy Granelli. Andy has played drums since he was a young lad. His first band was Model Americans. He later was in the Nerve Agents until he hit the big time joining the Distillers. He got evicted from his house because of what he said in a Thrasher interview with Corey Duffel, and most recently has moved back to Santa Cruz and started a side band with Clifford from Blast. Although Andy's a hard-hitting, badass drummer now, it didn't necessarily start out that way. Actually, his first lesson, he put the teacher to sleep.
And he's like, okay, go at it. So I'm playing it. And it's like a while, you know? And I'm like, just like, keep going. Finally, I like, look, I'm here, you know? And he's just fucking, he's like, oh, by the way, I'm narcoleptic, you know?
I want to thank all you who purchased our Chris Pastor shirts helping raise money for the NAACP. Apparently, the COVID has slowed down the post office to the point that I still have yet to receive them from the printer. Once I do, I'll send them out right away. Thank you for your patience. There are still a few remaining on our website. And now I want to give a shout out to Solstice Skate Shop in New Bedford, Massachusetts.
Shout out.
Stony J says, thank you guys for keeping the authentic skate shop vibes going so he doesn't have to go to Zoomies. Jay Vasconcellos, here you go, my friend.
Shout out.
All right. Are you ready to be liberated?
This is Andy Granelli, and you're listening to Talkin' Schmidt.
It's cool, like tonight is the night.
Here we go again.
Just give it the old cause turn.
All big dogs in.
Schmitty.
96 times, Schmitty.
Thanks, Schmitty.
We on? Schmitty.
Talking Schmidt.
That's called going to the hospital, bitch.
I be shit my pants, lad.
Your Rolodex is fucking deep.
It's about the one.
Who is this guy? Thinks he's tough shit.
What's up?
We're tastemakers.
Come on, Schmitty, what the fuck?
Let's hear it for Greg Smith. Yeah!
Back on Zoom, all up in your YouTube business. This week, I'm jumping into the music world, and I have my drummer friend from down in Santa Cruz, California, the band The Distillers. This is Andy Granelli, kids. What's up?
What's up?
How you living?
I'm surviving. I'm doing all right. Can't complain. How are you?
Yeah, same. I mean, you can complain, but I try not to. What's your zone like? Are people taking it serious? Or I know on the coast, a lot of times I see a bunch of fucking people are flocking to the beach and they're acting like there's nothing going on. But like in your neighborhood, is it more serious or do people just not, what's the deal?
We live in Pleasure Point. And so there's like the beaches are going off and we avoid it. You know what I mean? We live off 41st. So you're familiar with Santa Cruz, you know?
So sure.
There's restaurants and stuff on our street, and like restaurants are open, coffee shops are open. I mean, a lot of stuff outside. And for the most part, I think most people are good, wearing masks and being respectful and things like that. But there's always the, you know, they're always mixed in the token, like numbnut, just no mask, you know, oh, just being disrespectful of the space and other people and stuff. And but Santa Cruz has been interesting because it's been really low, like in the case count, you know. There hasn't been many cases, but up until like a couple weeks ago, 4th of July, it's kind of popped off. And so now we went from like 300 cases in Santa Cruz to like suddenly like 850 cases in Santa Cruz in like 2 weeks, you know.
Right.
So you can see it kind of pick up, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
My daughter's school just got closed. You know, she's supposed to start school at the end of August, and that's off. You know, she's 4, so.
Okay. Yeah, I was listening to something on NPR talking about that, and they were saying that their study was kind of that the younger kids apparently up till now have a lower percentage of spreading the virus, which is a good thing because they're the hardest to get like high school people can handle Zoom and deal with that whole thing on their own. But the younger kids, they need the parenting if they're going to do it from home. And that takes extra attention. And it's just like, I think like the overall message I'm getting, I don't have kids, but it seems like parents are really starting to appreciate teachers a lot more.
Yeah. And rightfully so. You know, I mean, teachers like, yeah, so much of your life, your like young life, you think about like adults in your life, you know, I mean, teachers are always there and they either send you one way or the other, you know?
Right.
And so many people, like even like my wife will talk about like, you know, hating school until there's like that one teacher who made like a difference and like listened to her, helped, you know, just like kids and like with adults in general, it's like a weird vibe. I feel like you got to trust them. I mean, I can't imagine really being a teacher. Sometimes when I think about like, you know, my four-year-old and then thinking like, what if there's like 30 of them, you know, and then how do you like navigate that, you know, just dealing with like all these kids and stuff. And it's wild. You know, kids are a lot.
Well, true or false, you were born at the same hospital as I was in Redwood City.
It's true. It's very true. Redwood City, Kaiser Redwood City. It turns out you and I were just like this down the path of life. And until today, do we really connect and chat, you know?
Right.
Face-to-face, but
yeah it's insane because Peninsula, Redwood City, we were born, and then later in life my mom lived on Jefferson Court where you lived, and I don't know what you would call it, but in between some living out abroad, I lived back at home with my mom, and so we lived on the same street for a couple of years.
Yeah it's a trip.
And that's crazy.
I remember seeing like maybe you had like a box or something you guys would skate, or like do you have like a quarter pipe or something?
Yeah, we had like a little ramp, and then I think we had a little slider bar or something we'd bring out into the street and play around. Yeah.
I was like, oh, whoa, like cool. My mom and I moved there like the last couple of years of high school, or so I was probably like a freshman in high school or something. During that time.
So did you grow up, where did you grow up?
In San, well, there, and then my mom and I, we lived on Rollins Road. Like frontage road to the freeway.
Down by, yep.
We lived there forever, like fucking forever, 15 years or something like that. And then it was such a shithole. And finally, like we moved, like when I started high school, to that place on Jefferson. Okay. And then I lived there until high school, and then I moved to the city. Yeah.
Where did you go to junior high and like grammar school?
So my parents divorced when I was like a baby. My dad split, and my mom worked, and we lived in San Mateo, but then my grandparents lived in Burlingame. And thankfully for my mom, my grandparents watched me, right? Like after school. So I went to school in Burlingame, kind of where they lived. So I went to like Burlingame Intermediate School, and I went to like Lincoln Elementary. So like kind of, you know, the north side of Burlingame, Millbrae.
Okay. Stuff. Yeah. Oh, cool. And then how'd you get into playing drums?
In like elementary school, they had this thing where it was like, you can, when you hit like the fourth grade, you could decide, you could pick like to play an instrument, you know, and we had this like assembly, and they're like, you guys could play this or that, you know, like saxophone or tuba or, you know, and then it was like drums, and then like the drum set looked like sick, you know. I thought like, I was like, oh, that's cool, like, you know, it's like something you could like tinker with, it's kind of big, it's kind of like a car, it's like loud, and you like fucking beat on shit. It just like spoke to me, you know?
Okay.
But then when you go to learn how to play drums, like at school, they don't sit you down at a drum set. They give you fucking two sticks and a fucking pad, and they go, you like right, left shit, you know?
Yep.
And so I was like, this sucks. Like, where's the drum set? Where's the fucking cymbals, you know? And so then I bailed off that. But then, yeah, and then just like got into skateboarding in like the sixth grade and like skate videos and learning about like punk rock, and then just like realizing like, oh yeah, like I kind of remember how to do some of that shit. And just getting into it through that fucking, had a job in like the seventh grade and bought, my grandpa rented me a storage locker, off Third Street in San Mateo down by the bay.
Uh-huh.
And, I like bought a drum set off a friend and, like put it in there in the storage locker and like practiced in that. Just taught myself, you know.
What was your spot? B Street Music or?
No. Well, I would go to B Street to get stuff. And I actually took one drum lesson there.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, but the drum teacher was narcoleptic. And it was like amazing. He was like, my mom and I went in there. I like to buy drumsticks or something. And he was like, oh, like this kid looks like a drummer. Look at him, you know, because I was like 6'5" in like fucking eighth grade, you know. I was like, yeah. He's like, I'm a drum teacher. You should come. Like, come check it out. First one's for free or whatever. And I was like, okay. It's my mom, you know. So like the next week, go down there and downstairs at B Street Music underneath the building, there's like practice rooms and stuff. And he's like, okay, go at it. You know, I played this like 4/4 like duck beat, you know, and so I'm playing it and it's like a while, you know, and I'm like, just like keep going. And he's sitting behind me and finally I like look, cause I'm here, you know, and he's just fucking,
what?
He's sleeping, you know? And I was hey, dude, you know, he's like, oh, by the way, I'm narcoleptic, you know?
No way. So,
was my drum lesson.
What, but is that where you would get like your drumsticks and like equipment when you were younger?
Yeah, totally.
Did you ever go up to Gelb?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because Gelb every year had that sale. They would have like, you know, like a blowout. You like wait in line.
Yeah, exactly. That was right across from the high school I went to. So I was really familiar with Gelb.
Okay, so that's Sequoia, right?
Yeah.
Sequoia High?
Yeah, right on El Camino.
Yeah.
It's insane. Yeah. You were skating as a kid. Were you reading Thrasher at all?
That's how I found out about everything. Everything in like life, really.
No way.
Yeah. Okay. Fuck yeah. Music, like how to be a person, just being a skateboarder, just like everything, you know? Because I kind of grew up, because I had to, my grandparents were old, you know, and they were like watching me. So like in elementary school, like I could never like go out or like have friends over, you know, because my grandparents, they didn't want to deal with it, you know. So it's kind of like, I was kind of like pretty lonely. And then like in junior high, I was just kind of like this nine ball like kid, and I didn't have like a lot of friends then. But when I found like skateboarding and Thrasher especially and like skate videos, and it was like art and music and skating, and it was all fun and cool, and like it was like other kids, like I felt like me, you know. And then the kids that I met through skating all had like, you know, divorced parents, or like they all had like some shit in their lives too that we all like related to, you know. And it just became like this thing. It was like perfect for me, you know?
Do you remember like some of the early influences that kind of were like larger than life, where you were just like, oh yeah, this is the shit, you know, like whether it be a band or a skater or any of that stuff, where it was like early, like your first vinyl or whatever?
Yeah, like I remember, well, like Mark Gonzalez when I was a kid was shit. And then in skate for like music stuff, I also found out about Gilman Street pretty early on.
Right.
So like a lot of bands around Gilman Street, I was always really impressed by. And, you know, I would like, you know, take the fucking train up there or take the bus, take BART to Gilman, like on a weekend, you know, and like go to shows, and really got into that scene and like those bands. And so like 15 and Crimp Shrine, bands like that. And then like Jawbreaker and Rancid and like Green Day, you know, whatever, like all the bands that come out of that scene, like Lookout Records bands.
AFI, right?
AFI, yeah. And then just like, then later on, like meeting and becoming friends with those guys and just all having like the same kind of story too, you know, same kind of shit. I always like Mark Gonzalez too, because I always liked his art, you know. I always thought it was badass to like draw his own, like his own art on his boards and stuff. And
totally with the paint pens.
Yeah, totally. And then being like in like the seventh grade and taking the bus to like EMB and then like seeing that gap, like the Gons gap, you know, and just being like, oh yeah.
Yeah. I know. We're so fortunate to have all that stuff. Like, I mean, the Bay Area is just huge for music, skateboarding, like a lot of things. Like, no band's missing San Francisco when they go on tour. And so many skaters flock here also to like get photos. It's such a photogenic city and just such an iconic place. And growing up and living here my whole life, I think you as well. It's like, man, we're blessed.
Yeah. Totally. You could kind of be born anywhere, you know, and but fucking here we are. There's lots of people from our area that have done cool shit, you know, and I don't know. I think it speaks to this, to the space too. California is like a pretty inspiring place, you know, and the Bay Area especially.
Totally. So when did you kind of get a little more serious about like, this is more than a hobby? What did you, when was your first band or like you started playing drums with other people?
Like my first year in high school, I started meeting other kids that wanted to play music, but I was trying to find something where I could go play at Gilman Street. Like that was my goal. You know? And having gone to shows there, like in junior high and shit, I was like, fuck, like, you know, if these guys could do it, I could do it, you know? And, then I met, Tim Presley, in high school, like my freshman year of high school. He went to Aragon. He went to a different high school.
Okay. But
we kind of met through this girl named Christine. And she introduced me to Tim and Ken. And Ken was the guitar player for our band in high school called Model American. And that band, we just got together and played. And Ken was like a really good guitar player in high school, you know? Good for us, but like back then we were like, wow, you know. And he had like, he was one of those guys also like very vision, had like driven, had like a vision of the band. He like had the band name, he had songs and stuff, and he was good. He could pull it off, you know. And so I got with those guys, and then it came together pretty quick. And then we just started playing kind of wherever, like teen centers and stuff. And I remember that like Palo Alto had a place called like the House, and you could go and play there for free. It was like a teen center, and one of us like met the people who ran it, and between them and like some guys in Redwood City, because there was guys from Redwood City in our band too, and I kind of forget how we all met the Redwood City guys, but Dante and Josh Stinson. And this guy, Colin Page, that was a long time ago, but like, it was like doing the teen center fucking circuit and then, Bob's Donuts.
Right. Did you guys play the, Pony Express ever? There was a pizza place that used to have punk shows, when I was in high school, which might've been was probably for sure earlier, but, I don't know how long it went.
No, but I think we played Pizza and Pipes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's I want to say we did Pony Express, but we played Pizza and Pipes.
Okay.
But we recorded a demo at B Street Music. They had this deal. It was like $100 and you could do a demo. The guy who did it was this guy named George Rivas. He was the sound guy for Los Bukis, who are like a really popular like banda, like band, you know?
Oh, sick.
Yeah. And it was like, at the time we were kind of like, he had like the satin, like Los Bukis jacket on. He had like this like feathered do and was this like totally 80s, like record producer, sound guy. He was just railing coke the whole time. And we were like, why is he, you know, me and Tim and Ken were like, why is he going in the bathroom so much? You know, this is fucking weird, you know? And he'd like come out and he'd be like, ah, okay, you know, get you set up and shit. And just like real like frantic energy and just this like crazy guy. Anyways, we did like this demo and he starts getting into mixing, and it's, you know, it's like a 12-hour thing. And I think the coke ran out because he stopped going to the bathroom. he got like super agitated and was like, all right, this is it. Like, you guys are done. Fucking bumped that shit to a CD and then like gave it to us and then kicked us out. And that was that. But it was worth it. It was $100. And then that CD or tape or whatever, that got us Gilman shows. So we were able to send a demo to Gilman Street and take it.
And that was your high school band?
Yeah. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. Super fun.
A couple of those guys went with you to Nerve Agents or?
Yeah. Tim.
Just Tim.
Yeah. So then we started playing Gilman Street and Berkeley Square and doing lots of shows around the Bay Area. And played with other like hardcore and like punk rock bands. And doing so, met Eric, the singer of the Nerve Agents. He had a band before the Nerve Agents called Redemption 87. And became friends with him and always liked him and, you know, kind of looked up to him. You know, he's like older than us and thought his band was the shit. You know, we're like, oh, you know, try to get a band with that guy. Like, it would be cool. Just like daydreaming. Like, oh, it'd be cool if like that was the singer of our band, you know. Uh-huh. And then I kind of bugged him enough that he agreed, you know, and started the Nerve Agents with him and his roommate at the time, this guy Kevin, a couple other guys, but not Tim, and had our first couple practices. And I was like, we should get another guitar player because Kevin was the only guitar player at the time.
Okay.
And Tim was my best friend and just someone who I always loved his art and loved being with him and being around him. And I wanted him there, you know?
Yeah.
And so it just happened, you know, and Tim became the dude, you know, and Dante, the Nerve Agents bass player, is from Redwood City too.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Fuck. That's rad. Dude, it's such a crazy small world. Like, I keep meeting people. That's like, how did we never, I don't know, but it's cool. You guys played Skater of the Year though, right?
Oh yeah, we played Skater of the Year at the Fillmore.
Yeah, I think that might have been the only Skater of the Year party we had at Fillmore.
Oh yeah, it was kind of a shit show. Tim threw, I know he threw like a mic stand into the crowd and it like clobbered some poor girl on the shit. It was just mayhem.
Yeah, they always have like the first hour used to be a open bar, so it would just get like so nuts right out of the gates. And then like, of course there's fights or just something crazy would happen. And we were just like checking off each place. Eventually there was nowhere we could have the party anymore.
That's funny.
What was the, where did the name Nerve Agents, how did you guys settle on that? Do you remember?
Eric had all that stuff baked. You know, he had this idea for the band and he had all that shit already figured out. So Eric was in the military. He was a Marine, you know, and he just would read all these stories about chemical warfare and shit like that. And so he got this like concept for like this chemical warfare fucking thing. And that was like the vibe, you know, Nerve Agents and
right,
kind of fitting today, you know. Fucking
yeah, I was gonna say it was kind of like ahead of its time.
Yeah, I know.
Shit. Is that where you got the nickname Andy Outbreak?
Yeah, because yeah, it was, you know, just coming up with your punk name, you know.
So, right. Were you guys playing when was the farm still around or no?
No, we missed the farm because I think the farm closed. And like the farm closed like the early 90s. Eric is 10 years older than me. And his band, you know, in the like late 80s, early 90s, played the farm all the time. He'd talk about it all the time.
Dude, we used to take the bus. 7B would take you right up there, drop you off every Friday. And I always say this, and I think it's true from my memory. Verbal Abuse and DRI played every Friday there unless they were on tour. And then there was like four or five other bands. So I saw Verbal Abuse and DRI so many times. It was like, at the time, it just seemed like, oh, whatever. And then I look back, I'm like, dude, another blessing. Like seeing, I saw Verbal Abuse with whatever, two different singers, DRI. Like it was just insane. And like, that was like a huge part of me growing up was the San Francisco punk rock influence and stuff, and like RKL and I forget who else was kind of like there a lot, but you know, you would see these bands come through, but they would play with the staples, and you start kind of getting a little like Bay Area pride or local pride in your dudes. Of course, you were open to everything else, but it was kind of this feeling of like, we got a rad thing going, you know?
Yeah, it's so cool. I know I'm in a band right now with Clifford from Blast.
Oh, yeah.
So he's got like tons of stories just about playing with DRI, like COC, like Fender's Ballroom shit down in LA, playing the farm and
right
on in San Francisco and stuff like that. And our bandmate Danny like worked at the Stone, so you know.
Oh.
But you know, for me, like all that stuff was gone by the time I showed up, you know, in like 96, 95, 94, like a lot of that shit was closed. And so when we were like in high school and trying to do Model American, like there was kind of like nowhere to play, because those clubs that were left were like big. It was like the Cocodrie was around, and now it was attainable for us. But then other than that, it was like the Boomerang on Hate Street, just like bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
But the clubs that, for me, like to grow up and like see these other bands and like have this sense of community was always Gilman Street, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so San Francisco was like the 21 and up crowd for me.
Right. You know?
And then Gilman Street or like Berkeley, like those shows, house parties and stuff, Coin Court, you know, those were like kind of more attainable.
Right. Yeah. No, there, I think San Jose kind of started being more of a hub a little bit later after a lot of that stuff went down.
Yeah. What was it? Electric Avenue. Wait, what was the club in San Jose?
To be honest, like, I don't really remember a lot of the names and stuff, because it was kind of my hardest partying days. And like, I was just getting in cars and like, yeah, so it was kind of just like, we had a band, I don't know if you ever heard of them. There was this band, Discontent. They were from Redwood City, and I went to school with those guys. So I ended up being like roadie or bro, whatever, hang out. And, you know, they opened up for like all the best. Like, it was insane. Like, we're opening for 7 Seconds. We're opening up for Bad Brains, like whatever. And you're like, no way, this is not real. It was just crazy. We had the Varsity in Palo Alto, which was all ages. But then I think it was Suicidal Tendencies, maybe. There was some crazy stage dive off a speaker or something, and the crowd split apart, and the dude broke his head open, and that was the last show ever. So,
it's always something, you know?
But I saw my first show was at the Varsity in Palo Alto for sure. Yeah. That was where we kind of got comfortable, and then we're like, let's go to the city where the big guys are. You know, I was like, so how did the Nerve Agents to Distillers happen? Nerve Agents break up, or did you try to do both? Or
I tried to do both, because by that time, you know, high school was over and everybody went to college, and I tried college, but I just had always had this this fucking desire to play. Like, I just wanted to play drums. It's all I cared about, you know? And college for me was tough to just sit there and like listen to shit I didn't care about, you know? So, you know, Nerve Agents started touring. The more we started touring, the more I started realizing like, this is where it's at, you know? You get to travel, you get to play every day, and you get paid, and it's fucking awesome, you know? And I, once we did our first tour, I was like hooked on touring and wanted to just do that. But then, you know, touring was only happening in the summer, you know, and because it was like everyone had schedules and, you know, Eric had to work and Tim was in school and Dante was working. It's just like this thing. And Brody and I had met because Distillers and Nerve Agents actually played together a lot. So when she first started the Distillers, she had a different band, you know. It was Kim and Matt, these other two, and Rose. And Kim and Matt were a lot older than Brody. Kim and Matt were like Eric's age, 10 years older. And like Matt Young was in the ads and Channel 3. He was like this old head. And Kim Chi worked at Epitaph. She was this older woman. And I think they had a lot of clashes, you know. And it was harder for them, I think, to reconcile the age gap thing, and it just didn't work out. And so she broke the band up and was like, fuck this, I'm done. But she had booked like the opening slot for that winter in December. It was this December of 99. And it was like going to be Distillers, AFI, and Rancid. And it was going to be like the best, biggest tour of the year. But she had no band. And her and I were friends. So we're talking about it on the phone one night, you know, and I was like, I'll do it. I already knew the songs. I knew the record, you know. And she like went back and thought about it and was like, okay, let's do this. And then I enlisted Dante, the Nervatus bass player, and he did it with us. Kind of the rest is history, you know. So we did that tour. It was, you know, a 6-week tour, and came home and she was like, you know, I'll do whatever. Like, let's make this work out. You know, she had like a whole record written and ready to go. So tried to make it work. Doing both, but it just didn't work out. You know what I mean?
So who was the original on the first record?
Matt and Kim.
Matt and Kim. Kim, yeah. Was a bassist?
Kim's a bass player. Yeah. Her name's, Kim Chi. And okay. Then Young was the drummer. And he played, like I say, he was in Channel 3 and he was in the ads and shit like that.
Okay.
But then the other two records I'm on. And this new record we just recorded too, so.
Is it about to drop?
Brody's finishing, she should have finished it last night, actually. I think she had like a couple of small things to do. And so hopefully, I don't know when we'll see it. Maybe in 3 months, October, November.
Uh-huh.
We'll see.
How many new songs?
11.
Whoa.
So 11 cool. New songs and for Rise Records. And so it's pretty rad. Like, you know, it was really cool to get back in there and do that whole thing with Brody again and record that record.
Yeah. When was the last time you guys recorded before this? A while ago, right?
Yeah. 2004. Yeah.
Wow. What's the what's the discography? There's Coral Fang. What's the first one called? Just the Distillers?
Self-titled.
Yep.
And then there's Sing Sing Death House came after that I'm on.
Uh-huh.
And then, Coral Fang. And now this new record that's going to be coming out.
And do you feel like it's a similar style or have you kind of embarked in some new areas or what?
Yeah, there's some... I would say it's like the next logical step for the band, you know, listening to Coral Fang and then this record. It's still Brody, you know, it's her. She's really good at the melody thing, you know, and it's, you know, it's rock, it's guitar driven, you know, and it's pretty badass. I like it, you know.
Do you think that the older Brody gets, does she tend to want to go away from that? Because that's what drew me to you guys. And I noticed like when she did her solo and stuff, she was a little more melodic and stuff. Does she kind of not want to do that or does she just pick and choose or how's that work?
No, I think she lets it rip. You know, on this record, she lets it rip for sure.
And, oh, rad.
I know she loves aggressive, loud music, you know, but the thing I always liked about Brody is she was really good at marrying like that aggression with like melody, and like her voice is really unique, you know, and she's just badass, you know, and just being able to marry that aggression with good melody is something she's always been able to do.
Are you ready to be liberated? And this is our history. Well, the boys have been free from their cages. I got freedom in my ears. My name is Brody, I'm from Melbourne. Detroit, Melbourne. I grew up on Bell Street, then on Bell Street. My mom kicked out my dad. Found a way. She found a way. I was grew up so better. And wasn't through the mother. And I
this record is like that. I think her solo record and that Spinneret record she did, I feel like that was her exploring, just exploring what she could do, you know?
Sure.
Working with other musicians, you know, and just kind of taking a different, looking at things with a different perspective.
Okay. You mentioned Rose. I don't know much about Rose.
Rose was in the Distillers with Kim and Matt, and she was a lot younger. She's younger than me, maybe 3 or 4 years younger than me. Brody and I are the same age. So Rose was a little bit younger. Rose's dad was in Sponge. Do you know, remember Sponge?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Rose's dad was just like a head. He like knew people, and Rose got introduced to Brody, and Rose was a guitar player, and she rips a guitar. But, you know, Rose is fucking crazy. She was like the craziest person that I think I had ever encountered up until that time. You know, just like fucking all energy, just insane. If I like to party, you know, and the drugs thing kind of got in the way, you know. Over the years, you know, we did, Rose was in the band. She did Sing Sing Death House. And in between Sing Sing Death House and Coral Fang and touring, because during Sing Sing Death House, we toured a lot. We toured probably 10 months that year.
Wow.
And basically, since that December 99, we toured to 2002 consistently, nonstop. And then 2003, we took a little bit of a break to do Coral Fang, but I think in those years, and you're touring with someone all the time, and you're just, it's hard to deal with someone who's on drugs and just fucking with crazy fucking energy.
Right. So, I know people like that in my life too.
You know, right? But Rose is super talented. She's a good person, you know, but it just, we couldn't do the band with her anymore. It had to end. Okay. If we wanted to keep going, if we wanted to stay sane, like, we had to part ways with Rose.
Right. Can you give me 1 second?
Yeah.
Take a quick piss break?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, I'll be right back.
Okay.
This is a public service announcement.
And this is the public service announcement is go back in time. Go watch an old skate video from when your past, when you were young. Maybe even younger before your time. Go do some history. Maybe learn a new trick from the old school. Why not? Public service announcement. I love you guys. Stay up.
Talking Schmidt beanies. We just got restocked. Get yours today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's get a word from our sponsor. It's Don Wapo, kids, with that new signature Andy Roy sauce.
Ahí le va, compadre. Un saludote al Don Wapo, aquí en el mero, mero rancho Escalante.
Mira, mira nomás. Puro rancho orgánico aquí.
¡Woo! Chile, tomate, cebolla. Todos los animalitos son mis amigos.
What about our friend over at Blue Plate?
Hey, it's Corey at Blue Plate, 3218 Mission Street. Come see us. Meatloaf, fried chicken, deviled eggs, Dollar Olympia beers. We're here every day of the week. We got a garden and we got smiles on our faces. Come let us make you happy.
Little background. So I work at Thrasher, obviously, and it was early days. It was me and Mofo. We were in a office where there was a door and you could close the door. So there was no windows and it was just dark in there because he liked to have the lights off, and he would burn sage and he would play this song every day, at least once, probably multiple times. And it was Oh Serena.
Oh Serena. Oh, Serena. Oh, Serena.
And it was so in my fucking head because it's just, oh, sorry, you know, over and over. And I'm like, who is this fucking band? And that's how I got into you guys. So personal question is there a story? Is there a person named Serena? Is that a fictitious person or like, who is that?
Yeah, I want to say, and I might be mixing up my references with Brody, but I think I'm pretty sure Serena is someone that Brody met when she first moved to LA.
Okay.
And that person was the typical LA shithead, didn't give her any time of day, and just like not a nice person.
Okay.
And so I'm pretty sure that is who. Now, it's either that, because I, like I said, I kind of forget, or it's her friend from Australia.
Oh, okay.
That's one of the two.
When you first joined the band, was Brody living in Northern California?
No, Brody lived in L.A. Brody was married to Tim.
With Tim. Oh, and Tim lives in L.A.?
Tim was living in L.A.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they lived in L.A. kind of always, you know.
Oh, Brody, okay. So she's always been there. Were you a part of the band when they started Hellcat?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nerve Agents were in Hellcat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so Nerve Agents did two records with Revelation, and you know, we had a two-record deal with Rev, and then we played the Fillmore. It might have been the Skater of the Year party. I don't remember. It was at the Fillmore, and like Tim came to the show and was like with Lars and from Rancid, and they were like, we want you to be on Hellcat, you know, do you want to, you know, we're like, yeah, fuck, let's do it. So the last Nerve Agents record came out on Hellcat. And so it was like Hellcat, Distillers. It was like this kind of big, happy family vibe for a minute there.
Wasn't there kind of an offshoot band that was Rancid and Brody had a song with them on it? Or was that Rancid?
Transplants?
Transplants, yeah. Okay, that's what it was. I saw the Transplants at Slim's, and she came out and played a song.
Yeah.
And that was like, wait, this is the girl that's in that band, the Mofo. And then it was just like, I started eating it up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because we did that whole tour with Transplants.
Okay, right.
And it was Distillers, Transplants. Transplants was Tim and Travis Barker and this guy named Rob Aston. That was a fun tour.
Was that hard for you guys? Like, were you guys all friends? And then when they got divorced, did that kind of put you in a weird position? And
yeah, totally. It was, yeah. That was hectic because it was a big happy family. And I had two bands on Tim's label.
Right.
And you know, a lot of our friends, a whole group of people that I had been fucking since like junior high school, like looked up to, been friends with, Gilman Street, the whole thing, all like turned their backs on us.
Oh. And
everybody dissed us. Everybody fucking gave us the cold shoulder, you know? But it was like I was expected to quit the band. I felt, you know,
like pick a side.
In my opinion at the time, and now even today, you know, it's her personal life. What Brody wants to do with her personal life and who she loves is separate from the band, you know. Uh-huh. They're not related, you know. And I, as a musician, as an artist, and my desire to play and to do music was greater than these people's hate on me for not following along or like dissing my friend, who it should be noted, like Brody has always been super loyal and a great friend to me. And so when she came to me and said, Tim and I are getting a divorce, I have to leave him, I fucking believed her. You know what I mean? So, I mean, and it's her, like I say, dude, it was her choice. And I stood by her, you know, but yeah, yeah. We caught a lot of shit for that.
Yeah, I can imagine. Also, I wanted to ask you how being in Tony Hawk's Video Game, did that impact you guys popularity-wise? Did you see the Tony Hawk bump or like what?
Fuck yeah. Yeah, it was huge.
Really?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, because...
what was it? It was the City of Angels, right?
City of Angels, yeah. And I played the shit out of that video game, too. So, you know, and they're like, come on. I thought it was rad. But yeah, it really helped the band a lot, for sure.
Out of all the, touring and stuff, has there been like a pinnacle moment where you were like either at the biggest crowd ever or you were opening for, I don't know, Guns N' Roses or whoever? Like, has there been like a few moments that you're like, man, it'll never get better than this?
I think the last, to be honest, coming back and doing it again and then going to play Reading and Leeds and doing like a main stage slot in front of fucking 90,000 people.
After
14 years being away.
Yeah.
To me, that was amazing.
And where was that?
In the UK.
In England, yeah.
Last year, yeah. The Reading and Leeds Festival.
Are you nervous or you do it so much that it's like, how do you feel? Like, does it change when you go from the Fillmore to 90,000?
Kind of no, because you really see, it just kind of blends in a little bit.
Uh-huh.
When I was younger and we were doing those shows, I would get super nervous. I would like get fucking wasted too, you know?
Right.
And I feel like that kind of played into it. I feel like, you know, getting wasted, like, and it took me a long time to like realize these things, but it kind of plays into your fear, you know? And so when we did Reading and Leeds this last time and being like straight, and I wasn't afraid at all, you know? And I was actually remembering and thinking, like, I remember doing this in 2005. I remember doing Reading and Leeds in 2005 and being shit in my pants.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
But then it's like... But,
did you guys headline?
We were like fourth from the headliner.
Who was headlining?
In the middle of the day. It was with Foo Fighters.
Oh.
Frank Carter. That kid, Youngblood.
Uh-huh.
And us.
Damn, that's thick. Is there any bands that you haven't played with that you would, you know, give your right drumstick for?
I don't know. No, because I feel very fortunate in the career that I've been able to have up to now.
Mm-hmm.
Just being able to do what I've done has been really special. You know, it's been really cool. And you know, we played with the Pixies when they came back, and that was like a huge thing for us.
Right.
Touring with like, you know, being in like junior high school and like kind of learning about music and like being into like super into like Mofo, Uplift, Party Plan, like Red Hot Chili Peppers and stuff. And then playing with them and like touring with them and like hanging with Flea and Anthony and having them come to our show and like, damn, you know, experiencing those kinds of things is like, it's all pretty special stuff, you know? So really at this point now, it's kind of, I don't know, I feel happy.
Have you had any fan out situations where you kind of just lost yourself and was like, I'm here with Flea or whatever?
I was really nervous. We just played with the Misfits. We did like six shows with the Misfits recently.
With Danzig?
Yeah.
Oh, sick. And
being like, you know, hearing everybody kind of be like, oh, Danzig, dude, he's a dick.
Yeah.
You know, fucking watch out, you know. Just hearing all the stories about him. But I love Danzig. I've always loved Danzig and the Misfits. And I saw him like after the LA show. And I was like, I got to say something, you know. And I was super nervous, you know, like hat in hand, kind of like, you know, Mr. Danzig, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just like, thanks, like said, thanks for having us or something like that, you know. But he was like super cool and super nice. And
how'd those shows go? Do those guys get along or are they just doing it for the money or what?
Well, that's a trip. So, okay, this is what I heard. There was a lawsuit where Danzig has been trying to sue Jerry Only for the Crimson Ghosts, I think like since the 80s. And just, it's been like this like long fucking court battle. And I guess what was going to happen was it was finally coming to a head a couple years ago. And the judge, it became apparent that Danzig was going to lose. And Jerry Only goes, hey, Glenn, you know, drop the lawsuit. I'll cut you in. If you do 20 shows with me. And so Danzig because I think the deal with like Danzig was about to lose like the little bit he did have, because it was proven that Jerry only like actually invented the Crimson Ghost logo and it was going to be all him, you know? But Jerry only, he just wants to rock. You know, he doesn't give a shit about the Crimson Ghost. He wants to play, which is amazing, right? So, you know, he says, Glenn, drop the case, do these shows, you'll make more fucking money, and you'll have a good time, you know? And that's what they did. And, I mean, did they have separate dressing rooms? Yeah. They all had their own dressing rooms, you know? And you're playing, like, these big venues, so there's, like, lots of space and stuff. They all had, like, their own buses and shit, but, you know.
They probably got...
And from what I hear, like, he's kind of a hard ass for certain things, but when I'm told about some of the stories about Glenn being a hard ass, usually it's with the caveat of like, well, you know, he's right. But I think it's his delivery. I think rubs the people the wrong way. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. Cause my story with Danzig is, Jake, was interviewing him for the mag and the publicist said, hey, listen, Glenn does not want to talk about the Misfits. This was before the reunion. And he's like, he will not talk about the Misfits. So ask him anything you want, but don't talk about the Misfits. So Jake gets on the phone, calls him, whatever they're talking. The first question is like, so what's up with the Misfits? And he hung up.
Yeah.
Totally. So it was funny.
Perfect response from both those two people too.
Dude, he came into the office. I remember he's like, fucking Danzig just hung up on me. And then he told me the story. I was like, well, yeah, kind of expect that, right? Fuck, it's so funny.
Hilarious.
Have you guys had any horror stories? Has there been any like bus crashes or like fans jumping? I don't know. Anything crazy that you could report?
Yeah. Luckily, we're cool on the bus crash thing, you know, because there, I mean, there's dudes that I know that gotten in lots of crashes.
Yeah.
You know, and there's been like fights here and there, and just a lot of it happened when we were younger, and it always has something to do with alcohol, you know what I mean?
Right.
Back in the day and shit. But now, the best story, and it's one I've told before, we were on tour at the Bronx. We were on a bus and they were in a van. So we're usually the way that works is like buses go from city to city. They drive overnight and you get to the venue the next day. And usually when you're in a van, like you kind of drive halfway, you stop, you stay somewhere and then you wake up early and then finish the drive. So that was what was going on. We're on the bus, we're driving, and I get a call from Matt, the Bronx, the singer from the Bronx. Right. And he's like, hey dude, we're not going to make it to the show. Like, I was like, what happened? You know, he's like, well, you won't believe it. But, and he tells me this story, and this is what happened. So they stay at this guy's house. They're in Detroit, and the guy lives across the street from a church, and the church has a parking lot, and the parking lot kind of has this big grassy kind of hill that goes up from the street up to this parking lot up above, right? And it's on a corner, an intersection, and it's prom. It's also prom. It's like Saturday night.
Okay.
And what happened was this kid, fresh out of prom, hammered, is doing like 90 down this big ass like Detroit street with nothing on it, and fucks up and goes up this embankment, flies his fucking dad's Escalade through the air where it fucking rotates upside down and lands like that on top of their fucking tour van.
No way.
And just totals the whole thing. And their bass player, James, was in the van. He was going to sleep in the van because there wasn't room in the house. And he was sitting in the back. James luckily was okay, because the way the guy landed was like on the front of the van. And James was like in the way back. And James was like, I just saw these headlights like come up and like twist in the air and just this like fucking loud smash and crashes. So at this point, Matt's telling me the story and I'm on the phone and I'm like, no way. I was like, we'll come get you, you know, partly because I wanted to see it too. So we tell the bus driver, and we were like 45 minutes outside of town. We come back around and we pick them up. And sure enough, there is their van fucking totaled with an Escalade upside down on the roof and fucking just mayhem, you know?
Damn.
And the kid who did it, you know, jumped out and was okay and like booked it. They ended up finding him. The cops found him passed out in some bushes out front of 7-Eleven. And they arrested him.
Oh, shit.
So that happened.
Huh. What do you think? What's one of your favorite cities to hit up when you guys tour through U.S.?
I had a lot of fun. Last time we were in Chicago.
I love Chicago.
Yeah. Chicago's a weird one because a lot of times you go in and out because you got to go in and it's kind of expensive. And so you end up staying like because you're on your way to somewhere in Indiana or like.
Yeah. So somewhere. You're out of town.
But we were in Chicago for 2 days the last time. And yeah, it was cool, man. Just went to the art museum, like the Modern Art Museum, and went to Chip Bayless's restaurant, Frontera. Oh, that was super good. Walked around and like did the whole thing, you know.
What's a typical day off for the band? Do you guys all hang or do you guys get like some space or like what?
Yeah, now that we've been doing it again, we all will get together, and I like going to art museums a lot. That's kind of my thing. And so I'm always trying to get those guys to go to art museum. But usually, yeah, like art, go to a museum, go shopping or cruise around. Brody loves a good laundromat, so oftentimes we'll hit up the laundromat.
To do laundry or just to hang out?
Do laundry, shoot the shit, you know?
Yeah. Interesting. Do you know, I'm sure she's had stalkers, right? Has she ever had some like crazy fans that are just like overboard?
Yeah. I think that over the years they've had their share of like weirdos and stuff that, but nothing like really terminal, you know, nothing that's been, too like unmanageable, you know? Yeah. You know, a lot of internet stalking.
Oh yeah. You
know, that's comments and shit like that.
Easy pickings.
Yeah.
Are you able to talk a little bit about like your hiatus and then what brought everybody back together?
Yeah. I mean, you know, with the band, with everything around Brody's divorce from Tim, and then getting together with Josh and Coral Fang coming out. Tim's very sober. He's like in AA and, you know,
it's
kind of expected from all of us to really be sober when we were doing like Sing Sing Death House and stuff. And, you know, I always drank beer and partied and stuff on the weekends, but I could kind of take it or leave it back then, you know? So when I joined the Distillers originally, it was expected of me to be sober. And I was fine with that. I didn't care, you know. I just wanted to play. But then as touring went on and you kind of meet people and, you know, it became more like of a thing, you know, like, fuck. Like, sometimes I want to have a beer, you know, but I kind of was made to feel like I couldn't, you know.
Okay.
It was like my own thing. Anyways, so when Brody and Tim split up and she got together with Josh, there was suddenly like no restrictions. And there wasn't this feeling, you know, like Josh and his friends are very welcoming and accommodating. And, you know, there's never like a feeling of like, you can't do anything you want to do, you know, just be yourself. Right. And so a little bit like the faucet kind of got cracked open a little bit. And then eventually the fucking spigot broke and it was just like drinking from the fire hose with all that shit. You know what I mean?
So partying kind of.
Just partying and being on tour and being away from home. You know, and from 1999 to 2005, we were on tour, like 6 years, just straight, you know? And, I think the just fatigue from being out and from partying too much just kind of caught up with everybody. And, Brody wanted a break. So Coral Fang, the touring cycle was over and it was time to record a new record. In Warner Brothers' mind, our label at the time, Warner Brothers wanted us to record a record. And, you know, I was pretty, like, focused on just playing because it's been, like, my only fucking thing in life, right? I just want to play. I don't give a shit about anything else.
Okay.
And, you know, and Brody was like, I want a break. I can't, you know, because she wanted to, in her mind, I think she was looking at her life, too. She wanted to have kids. Queens of the Stone Age were getting bigger and bigger. And I think she just wanted a break, you know? But I kept pushing it and Brody and I just butted heads again on that. And, Tim from the Nerve Agents, Tim Presley, my friend, had started a band. It was actually a band that he and I had started, like, on the side, called Darker My Love. And it was like a fun thing, but it became more serious, that band. And I was, at the time, just wanting to play, and went to Brody and was like, I want to be in Darker My Love. And somehow, and it between, I think, us just not communicating well, and I think my, maybe the way I brought it to her, it made it sound like I was quitting. And I think we both got mad at each other, Brody and I, and it was this kind of like, well, you know, then fuck it, I'm quitting. It became like this thing, you know? And it was really unfortunate. I think it didn't need to happen the way it did. But it also needed to happen, because I think all of us needed a break. We all needed to kind of go to our own spaces and for our own health, you know?
Right.
So the Distillers stopped for a long time. You know, the Distillers stopped. Brody had three kids, three beautiful children during that time. And I did Darker My Love with Tim. And that became its own thing.
Is that still going? Is Darker My Love still going?
No, Darker My Love. So I was living in LA when Darker My Love started, and ended up moving back to San Francisco, and I got hit by a car. So like within the first year of Darker My Love, like the Distillers broke up, Darker My Love started touring, we started doing shit. I moved back to San Francisco and got hit by a car and broke both my arms.
Oh, shit.
Just trying to go to the ATM to deposit a check.
On your bike or walking? Or
I was on my bike, and we lived on Frederick Street. So I was trying to hit the Wells Fargo on Haight, like Haight and Stanion. And this fucking car just fucking ran the stop sign and just T-boned me.
Whoa.
Yeah. And when that happened, it was like right at the same time where Darker My Love got asked to be the Fall's backing band for Marquis Smith in the Fall.
Yeah.
But I couldn't go. So, because I had like I had two fucking broken arms. So those guys went and did the Fall, and they did two records with Mark and gone for a year. And I was just tired and hurt feelings, kind of. To no one's fault, you know, I was just being sensitive and, yeah, you know, spending 6 years on tour, partying too much, and trying to do it again with a different band. I also was tired and I needed a break. I was trying to pretend like I didn't, you know?
Yeah.
And I just, one day, like in 2009, told Tim, and I was like, I can't do it, you know? I can't do it anymore. So I quit playing drums. And I quit. I didn't play drums again for like 6 years.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So then I just started working. I worked for the Sports Basement.
Sports Basement? In SF?
In San Francisco.
Oh, shit. The one, it was like by Best Buy?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, right. Oh, wow. Oh, man. Did you guys friend still or no?
Yeah.
You and Tim? Okay, rad.
Yeah.
And then you ended up moving to Santa Cruz, yeah?
Yeah, so lived in the city. And then during that time, I got married. I got married in 2006. And Jamie was born. My wife was born in Santa Cruz. But her dad was in the military, so she kind of grew up all over. But her family have roots in Santa Cruz, and they had like a rental house in Capitola, and that's where we live. So I came up for rent in like 2010, And we're like, let's try that out, you know? So moved to Santa Cruz.
Not a bad spot.
Pretty sweet. Yeah, totally got lucky on that. And, you know, we wanted to have kids too. So Santa Cruz is a good place, we thought, to raise a kid. And so then we had Mylan, my daughter.
Nice. Yeah. Me and Sally went and saw you guys. I forget where it was at. Oh, it was in Oakland, either the Fox or the Paramount. Fox?
Yeah, Fox. Yeah.
And we sat right next to your mom.
I know.
And she was so rad. She was like, dude, she's your biggest fan. She knows the song. She's like yelling at Brody. Like, it was so fun.
Yeah. My mom's always been really supportive, you know? Uh-huh. And, you know, would like loan me the car to play shows and, you know, carry my drums around and did what she could to help, you know? And I mean, it was just her and I growing up, you know? And my mom was a young mom too. So a lot of our grown up was done together, you know? So, yeah.
Well, being from Northern California my whole life, we love to talk shit on LA and SoCal. Is there anything in particular you can tell us that drove you back to Northern California from living down there?
You know, it's a trip, man, because remember when I always remember San Francisco was cool. Like everybody in LA, they were posers. Like, You know, they were just ripping off all the shit we were doing in San Francisco. That's the way I always felt as a kid. And now all those people, I feel like all those people who are doing cool shit in San Francisco, they all live in LA now.
They all moved. Yeah.
So it's funny because I lived in LA like 3 or 4 different times during Distillers and Darker My Love, but I can never get it to take. It was always just like never really worked out, you know? And now that all my friends live down there, I'm like kind of missing it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And like since we started doing Distillers again, which actually maybe is a testament to LA and it's fucking whackness, is that unless you're doing good, if you're not doing good in LA, you're extra fucked. Uh-huh. But if you're successful, I think, at doing good in LA, then it's the best place on earth. Uh-huh. Everybody's in your corner, you know?
So how does that go with, is the whole band in LA except for you?
The bass player, Ryan, he lives in San Diego.
Okay, but like, how do you create new music or practice, or like, do you just have to go down there for a while?
Yeah, when we did this last record, they would send me tapes and I would, or like, you know, audio files online and.
Oh, yeah.
Just like kind of did it all online through over the internet, you know, send files. And then I would go down there like every other weekend and play. And we'd play like all weekend and just kind of get it together that way.
Is recording a big deal for you? Like, do you love recording or do you hate it?
I used to kind of hate it. Now I kind of like appreciate all of it, you know, because like I used to take a lot of it for granted, like being in a band, playing shows, recording, like all those things, you know?
Yeah.
Especially now that we can't fucking do it, I take it even more. It's more of a special thing.
Yeah.
Last go around, like I really tried to be present and like pay attention to what was going on. And we recorded at the studio called Sunset Sound, which is someplace I recorded with Darker My Love in 2007. But it's one of the last analog studios in LA. And it's like Led Zeppelin 3 was recorded there, and Stones did like Beggar's Banquet there, and fucking like all these records that everybody loves was done there, you know?
Cool.
Prince recorded in the studio we recorded in. He like loved the studio so much that he tried to replicate it. And that's what Paisley Park studio is. It's basically the same layout as the studio that we did this record in.
Right.
So, yeah.
Wow. Who was it, a special like producer or anything?
We work with Nick Lane, and he did Grinder Man, like a lot of Nick Cave stuff. Yeah.
Sick.
Nick's great. Yeah.
Oh.
Definitely a cool experience.
And then what's like the process of like, you've done some videos, right? Like some rock videos, like, do you get like a video director and they come to you with this idea, or do you guys come up with the idea and try to find someone to do it?
At the first couple videos, it's kind of been a little mix of both.
Uh-huh.
We worked with Sophie Mueller, and she had an idea, and that was like a real crazy like Hollywood experience on like a soundstage and at Warner Brothers Studios, and like a hangar with like fucking, you know, like like all this crazy stuff, cameras and
right, you know,
60-foot tall screen and stuff like that. And then we worked with this guy, Dean Carr, and that was also like a weird, like downtown LA, like experience. But then we've also done like some collage stuff that we put together on our own, and or like worked with a friend and that kind of thing. Shooting videos is kind of weird, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know, because it's not like authentic, you know. It's not like a skate video where you're like you're skating and you're like actually trying to land the shit you're doing. Yeah. It's acting, you know?
Yeah, lip syncing and pretending. Yeah. It's interesting. I always wondered about that. Some of them are done pretty well, and then some of them are just really cheese ball or like lazy. Like there's always the ones that are just kind of like the formula, like, oh, here's what we do. But I always wonder about that. Do you collect vinyl at all? Do you have a collection of music?
Yeah, totally.
You have a lot of records?
I've sold a lot over the years, but yeah, I've kind of pared down to the keepers, you know.
What's your prized possession, or like what are some of your things that you're holding on till the end?
I just have some old records from just like from being younger that I would like listen to all the time. They're not like collector's items, I think, that like someone would, you know, not like this first pressing of this fucking 7-inch or whatever.
Yeah.
But like I have some old like Jawbreaker records and some 15 records and stuff that listening to that I love because they were like things I listened to when I was a young kid or younger and like learning and just have moments with, you know, like those just like where music kind of you get nostalgic about, and then you get nostalgic about the record itself and like, you know, putting the record on and like looking at the liner notes and stuff like that. Those are the records that mean most to me, you know?
Yeah. Fuck yeah. I love the line, all that shit that comes with it is for the tangibles. Like so tight.
Yeah. Cool. So my band that I have now is called Seized Up, and we're putting out a record with Punk's Pirates Press. And so that's actually been really cool because they make all the vinyl for everybody.
Dude, Pirates Press, another connection. Pirates Press was three doors from my last place I lived at.
Nice.
It was on the corner of 16th and Missouri.
Yeah.
I was right there. That's great. Yeah, those guys, they hit us up at the mag a lot and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. And that's with the guy from Blast?
Yeah, it's Clifford from Blast and me and Chuck from Good Riddance and our friend Danny B.
All like Santa Cruz, yeah?
Yeah, it's a trip. We all live in the same neighborhood.
Ah, that's cool.
Yeah.
And you got do you have a studio or do you have a garage or?
Yeah, we practice. There's a rehearsal studio in Santa Cruz called Santa Cruz Rehearsal.
Okay.
We've just been going there.
Where's your go-to for a nice night of dinner somewhere in that area?
Santa Cruz restaurants are weird, kind of. They're not that great. There's a couple. There's like Bantam for pizza and shit on the west side.
We do Akira Sushi.
Oh, Akira is really good, actually. Yeah. There's Akira. And that's the spot. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that one's good. All right. I did a website where we had the token drummer every time I saw a band, I would have the token drummer shot and it'd be a photo of the drummer. Who are some, like, give me a top three drummers out in the world that are still there. Yeah.
Now?
Yeah.
Well,
who's the best ever? Is it John Bonham? Is it Neil Peart? Is it Art Blakey?
Art Blakey's amazing. Yeah. But for like a rock drummer, Bonham, dude.
John Bonham, right? Yeah. Okay.
Tasty. But drummers like in punk and rock or whatever that are playing now, I love and always love Jorma Vic, who was the Bronx first drummer.
Yeah.
He's the Eagles of death metal. He's great. I love him. And he's a good friend. There was this band called the Icarus Line from LA, and they had this drummer named Captain. His name was Jeff, and he was the fucking shit. He was so good and solid. And I loved, I was lucky enough to get to tour with him a couple times and just like watch him play. And he wasn't like real technical or anything like that, but he was fucking like badass. And just like some guys have it where it's like whatever they do when they like just lay the sticks down on the drums, like makes the drums sound amazing.
Yeah.
And he was one of those guys and just like a rare talent, you know? And I don't think he plays anymore. He's not in any bands anymore, which is a shame, but he was like my favorite dude to play with and to watch, you know? Because you see like guys like Travis Barker, and Travis is like really good. But it's like, it's also fast and it's like a lot. It feels unattainable.
Mm.
But the thing with Jeff and the Captain is you could watch him and be like, God, I know I could play that, but I know I couldn't get it to sound like that.
Right. You know?
And that's the shit when you're a drummer that could do that. And then number three would be Dale Kroger.
Melvins?
Yeah.
What drums do you play?
Ludwig. I was lucky enough to meet Uli Salazar, who's the A&R dude for Ludwig now.
Oh.
And super supportive. And
sick.
He's a fucking really awesome guy and gets the lineage and the heritage of Ludwig drums because of guys like Ringo and Bonham who are like Ludwig guys.
Yeah.
But also looks at who's actually out there playing. Guys like me or, you know, other guys on the, like John Theodore and like these other drummers that are out there that are doing shit, you know?
Right. Fuck. Dude, that's so sick. What's the most important cymbal?
Hi-hat.
Well, I mean, but like as a, like a ride or crash or like size-wise.
Oh, size doesn't matter, right?
No.
No, they all do different things. The size kind of makes the sound be a little bit different, you know.
Okay.
I try to play like the biggest shit I could find because everybody's really loud, you know. But, you know, I don't know. Drums, I love drums. I
can talk about it. So sick. Yeah, it's just a hard thing like to find a place to play them.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the thing. Like for me too, it's, you know, I think that's kind of why I like drums because it was such a challenge too. And like you had to kind of grease like the kid whose parents had like the nice place in Hillsboro with like a fucking nice garage or something where you can go play.
Right.
And I was always like hitting kids up trying to be like, you know,
let's carpet the garage.
Yeah, totally. You know, And when I met Ken from Model American, like in high school, early on, you know, the thing that I loved about him the best was that he had a place to play. And it wasn't like drama. Like his parents, like they backed it. You know, they were cool with it, and you could bring drums there and play, and that was the thing. You know.
Is there a song that you like playing? Like out of all the Distillers set list, is there one that you're like that you can unleash more or something? Or is it?
Yeah, it's like sometimes the slower stuff. You know.
Oh.
LA Girl. I always like playing LA Girl.
We see a story about several women. LA women. On LA mission. This is a glory. Gonna get the hooks in. Gonna drag you way down.
Yeah, I like that song.
Yeah.
And then what's the name? Do you guys have names or anything for the new stuff?
The new record? The new Distillers record?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but I don't know if I could tell you what it is yet.
Oh, okay.
It might change.
Oh, really? Well, and then, and you don't even know when it's going to come out really right now, right?
I don't. No. Yeah. Hopefully soon, though. I haven't talked to Brody today. They're supposed to go on and finish. She has like a couple, just like the last, like, 0.5% of shit to finish, and you know sometimes that's like the hardest to do, you know?
Right.
So
you haven't heard it with vocals yet?
Most of it's done.
Yeah. Oh,
like
10 she was just doing like little accents and stuff.
Totally. Yep. Okay. 10 of the 11 songs are done. So it's one song. Just got to put like the finishing touches on one song, and then should be good to go. Yeah.
Can you give us a little bit of? Like what the writing style, is it going to be a breakup album or is it going to like, what, is there any theme or what do we got?
I think there's going to be some songs that do probably deal with the emotions around breaking up. I think there's some songs about her love for her family, especially her kids.
Yeah.
And I think there's going to be some songs just about the experiences that she's had. Brody's pretty, you know, I think that her writing style is pretty unique. She'll focus on stuff I think that is really close to her, but also juxtapose that with things that are kind of more more out there in the ether, you know, and kind of try to connect the two, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes sense, but.
Well, I'm a big fan. I love her voice. I love the energy you guys bring. And, you know, if you guys are playing in the area, I usually try to go out and watch it. And I think I did an interview with Brody. I was trying to find the magazine because it was a long time ago. But for Thrasher, we did an interview. I think it might have been right around the same time as that transplant store, maybe. But I can't really remember. But I did do one like... maybe 15 years ago or something.
You might have. Do you know, here's a fun fact. We were supposed to play Skater of the Year at the Great American.
Oh.
And it was around the time of when the band kind of broke up. And Brody, we ended up like not being able to play like a couple days in advance of the show of the Skater of the Year, and then I was able to get Eagles of Death Metal to do it instead.
Oh, okay. That was Danny Way.
Yeah.
I think they opened for Turbo Negro, actually.
Yeah. It was supposed to be Turbo Negro and Distillers.
Okay. Well, I've probably taken enough of your time. We like to end with a song. Do you got a song? Doesn't have to be one of yours, can be one of yours, but that we could take it to the bridge with.
What do you prefer? You want me to pick one of mine or?
I'm down.
You have a B City of Angels.
Okay. Yeah. Like when that song came out on the Tony Hawk video game, how were you aware that it had affected, like, did you just start hearing it more on the radio too? Or like, how did you feel? We didn't have Instagram, so it wasn't like, dude, my numbers went up or whatever. Like, what happened? Did you sell more records?
Yeah. Well, it was kind of weird because it all happened pretty quick. And they got the placement for the video game and the record came out. And then we did this spot on like MTV where they came and interviewed us.
Oh.
And then it was like boom. And then like Sing Sing Death House came out and then we were just on tour, you know.
Okay.
And then our shows went from like bottom of the hill size clubs, like 400 or 500 to like theaters. And then we're doing like 1600, 2000 capacity.
Right. Play, you know? Okay. Yeah.
And it just kind of went on from there. And then like all the festival shows and stuff, we went from like side stage shit to then we're like main stage, you know.
Sick.
And it kind of just took off, you know.
That's
it all kind of happened around the same time.
Okay.
You know?
Wow. Cool. So you guys are going to be in it for a little while, or is this just a one and done?
We have, we're supposed to be on tour in Europe now, but it all got pushed to next year. So we just released dates for European tour. If we're doing festivals next year, starting end of June into July. So that's going to happen. The record will definitely be out by then. I could tell you that.
Okay.
Has there been any
talk of you playing, like I've seen bands playing on Zoom or something, like is that even a possibility with a band of your caliber? Like would it just be they can't really hold your music?
I think you could do it. I think we could do anything we want. We'll see maybe when the record's finished and if shows aren't still happening, then yeah, we'll probably end up doing something like that. You know,
right.
It's not like the best, you know, like playing in it's like playing on TV, you know?
Yeah.
It's like acting again, you know,
okay.
Where no one's there and you got to kind of fake this, like, feeling this, you know,
this is,
you know, you got to kind of have people there, you know, otherwise it's like, what are you doing?
Right. Well, I'll end it with this. What is your mindset right now? How long are we going to be, are we going to get worse before we get better? What do we have to do? Like, is this all a whole political thing? Like what the fuck is going on in 2020?
I think it's bleak, man. With Trump sending these feds into our cities to counter protesting, it's not right.
Yeah. Portland, Oregon's been getting crazy.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of dangerous rhetoric going around. Trump, you know, trying to squash the USPS, cronyism, you know, putting his buddies as postmaster general, taking money away, you know, during a pandemic where it's obvious that vote by mail is going to be the most effective way to vote.
Right.
The whole deal with Trump, he's got to go. And I know a lot of people are starting to express discontent with the Democratic Party and Biden, but I don't think you're going to change the game between now and November to where you could choose a third party like Kanye or some bullshit like that. It's not going to happen. It's far more dangerous to leave Trump in place than it is to get him out.
Yeah.
So in my opinion, it's like, I think everybody's got to do what they can to vote in November to vote Trump out of office.
Couldn't agree more.
You're not only voting Trump out and putting Biden in place, but you're also putting in place someone who's going to choose the next Supreme Court justice when Bader Ginsburg's gone. Everything that Trump has undone with all the environmental rights and acts, everything he's done to a lot of our civil liberties that have gone away, the environmental shit that Trump has gone against, all that's got to be turned around.
Yeah.
4 more years of Trump, it's not, it's going to make it far worse. And we're going to get to it's going to get to a place where we can't go back from. So
yeah, it's kind of a blanket statement, but the easiest way for me, I was talking to somebody and we're good friends, but we don't see eye to eye on some of this stuff. And I was like, I'm not saying Biden's the answer. Like, he's not there. He has flaws, obviously, whatever. But my point was, in our lifetime, we've never been in a worse predicament. And, you know, it's not coincidence, I don't think. I think there's a lot of, I mean, some of it is, but a lot of it's not. And let's try something else. Without getting into details or any of that shit, just let's try something else. This ain't working.
It's not.
That's it.
It's not. It's not working. It never was. I mean, don't forget, Trump lost the popular vote as it is.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was a corruption from Russia. Like, there's a lots of tinfoil. Yeah. There's lots of conspiracy theories around there. It's a dangerous time. I wish us all the best, dude. Straight up.
I know.
This country.
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, it's easy to go down the rabbit hole of depression, but you know, I've been really working on trying to stay positive. And part of it is doing these podcasts, is just like hooking up with people like yourself and just trying to share good vibes and just have a good, you know, outlook on everything. I think we're going to get through it. It's just going to be like something we're going to look back at and just be like, Jesus fucking Christ, that was gnarly.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But thanks so much for taking the time out. I hope that, you know, sooner than later, you guys are on the road and you're coming through San Francisco or wherever, and I'll get to come check it out. I can't wait to hear this new music too, for sure. So right. Let me know when you're able to leak a little or something. I'd love to hear it.
I will, I'll hit you for sure.
And one last thing too, the helmet and everything. You do a lot of bike riding in your spare time, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, you got to send me some trails or some, like, because that's been helping my mind too, is like getting on the bike and just going for a ride. It's really a good way of social distancing healthy.
You're in San Francisco, right?
Yeah.
You ever go to the Headlands?
Yeah, I've done that like twice. I need to do it more. That one's awesome. You take that one dirt all the way to the beach.
Yeah.
It's just downhill bombing. It's super good. Yeah.
Yeah,
but we have a cabin in Boulder Creek, so I want to explore Santa Cruz Mountains.
Oh yeah, dude, I'll send you all kinds of stuff for sure.
Okay, hell yeah.
I was in Big Basin on Tuesday.
No way.
Yeah, there's tons of trails.
Okay.
So, I mean, and that's like my favorite thing, is to get away from the cars. Obviously, you know.
Yeah.
get away from the cars and just get out there and ride. You know, it's super fun.
All right. Well, cheers, City of Angels. It is.
All
thanks,
right.
Man.
Great.
Take care.
Okay. This is my daughter's favorite song.
Stay great.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talking Schmidt. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. When you subscribe, you'll get notifications every Tuesday of new episodes the minute they become available. Also, please leave reviews and a 5-star rating. It's the best way to help the show grow. All of the episodes will always remain free, but if you would like to help support the show, you can do so at talkingschmidt.com, where you can pick up some merchandise like t-shirts, beanies, hats, and stickers. The website has an entire archive of all of the episodes, with extra photos and videos. Email us with any suggestions, comments, or ways that the show may have improved your life at talkingschmidt@gmail.com. All interviews are conducted, edited, and produced by Schmitty. The intro music is Mary's Cross by the band Nature. A very special shout-out goes to the executive director, Cheryl Camisa. This is Talking Schmidt, where the Rolodex is deep, but the conversation is deeper.